I'm with Professor Damien Maher from Southern Cross University. Damien, could you just explain your background in terms of the subject matter that we're talking
Yeah, sure. So I have a PhD in biogeochemistry, and since completing that PhD in 2012, I've looked at all aspects of hydrology, catchment management, and what we can do to improve things in that space.
Is your specialty based on nature-based solutions to the problems?
Yeah, do a bunch of work in that space, so kind of looking at natural systems for carbon sequestration and, following the massive floods we had here, looking at the potential for nature-based solutions to mitigate flooding impacts.
Can nature-based solutions on their own solve a problem or provide a solution?
Depends on the problem that we're talking about and the scale of problem. Look, if we take the 2022 floods, for example, no. Nature-based solutions will not stop something of that magnitude, but nor will complete engineering or grey solutions either. So they certainly have their place in the mix of solutions, but not a silver bullet by any means.
Next.
We've been liaising with the CSIRO, attended meetings, and so on, but that's about the extent of the interaction there.
In terms of nature-based solutions, how would they work? What's the most fundamental component of that?
Yeah, look, when we're talking about flood mitigation, we can kind of picture it as, say, a series of buckets hanging above each other. The current state of our catchments, the hole in the bottom of those buckets is, say, the size of a dinner plate. By implementing nature-based solutions, which includes, reinstating wetlands within the landscape, reforesting floodplains, restoring riparian vegetation, we basically reduce the size of those holes in the bucket. So, we still get the same amount of rain hitting that top bucket, but it doesn't just kind of go straight through to the bottom bucket, which, might be Lismore or Corakai or Woodburn or somewhere like that, but we're actually making those holes smaller. So slowing the water down, and the wetlands themselves actually increase the size of the bucket, so they allow more water to be retained in the landscape as well.
What about retaining water in the upper catchments? There's been a lot of talk about retention systems. Dams are probably not is probably not a good word, but holding back the water before it can get down.
Look, I mean, that's one way in which nature-based solutions can help. They slow the water down and retain in the catchment. But, if we reflect back on the 2022 flood, for example, we'd need to hold back around 400 gigalitres of water to have any impact there. And, that mightn't mean much to who's listening to this podcast, but it's the equivalent of about 30 Rocky Creek dams held, installed upstream of Lismore. So, not really a feasible solution to hold back that much water.
Yeah, well, I think Sydney Harbour's 500
Yeah,
gigalitres.
so we're talking about a massive amount of water that fell.
Well, but it could be done, do you think?
Through
Through
engineering. Oh, look, anything's possible, but you just have to have a look at first the cost. So, to build a dam the size of Rocky Creek Dam in today's terms might be $1 billion with a B. So times that by 30, you're talking about $30 billion at least. And that's just upfront costs, not ongoing maintenance costs. Economically it doesn't stack up, let alone where do you put them? So, you'd be, flooding prime agricultural land, people's houses, their livelihood and their income. So, holding back that much water is just not feasible.
So, what do you believe is a more feasible way of attacking the problem?
Yeah. Look, I think with floods of that magnitude, we need to just accept that, they do come around, and, we just need to work out how we can deal with them, live with them, in terms of people living on the floodplain and in those really critical areas. How do we do that? Should we be doing it? Should we be actually spending the money that it would cost to implement those solutions on, relocating everyone from those kind of danger areas, not allowing new development to, occur in those areas?
What about engineered solutions such as, increasing the outflow to the ocean, reopening Boundary Creek to the ocean, and trying to prevent the convergence of water at Corakai, for instance?
Yeah, look, that's one of the scenarios that CSIRO are looking at. Again, that is not going to help areas like Lismore, for example. So the flood peak's already gone through Lismore by the time the water gets down to, the Broadwater and Boundary Creek and so on. The cost involved there and then the ongoing maintenance costs. So, dredging, having to put up training walls and so on. Again, it might look good on paper from a hydrological perspective, but I would suspect economically it won't stack up either.
Okay, what about timeframes? Let's say, something has to occur post mid next year once the report comes down. What do you think the report will suggest?
Look, I don't want to preempt things there. The CSIRO was tasked with, a very difficult problem. How do you first of all, the modelling aspect, creating a very detailed hydrological model of such a large catchment, a massive undertaking, and has produced, a plethora of really useful information that can be used down the track. But to actually look at options to mitigate a flood of that size, they're pretty well shoehorned into these massive engineering kind of solutions. So it might show that, if you put 30 Rocky Creek dams upstream of Lismore, then you can mitigate that, flood impact. But then, economically, socially, and environmentally, it just doesn't stack up as a solution.
It's difficult in this particular region, the Northern Rivers, because we have quite a strong alternative social outlook, if you like. Whereas if this situation occurred somewhere else in Australia, it may be a very different path to navigate.
Look, possibly, but again, if you were to implement engineering solutions in the areas where they're talking about, you're talking about rural agricultural communities. So I don't think it's just, the alternative, community members who would, be up in arms about building dams all through the upper catchment.
What about the cane farming industry? Do you think the cane farming industry has got a lot to answer for in terms of the effects of flood mitigation?
Look, I don't think it's useful to put blame on any industry. Where we are now is a consequence of, several generations that have, thought they're doing the best thing, in terms of opening up land, clearing land, and it definitely has resulted in economic prosperity for the region. Our agricultural businesses actually bring in a lot of money into the area. Support the towns that we, all need and require. So I don't think it's useful to kind of point the finger at any particular industry, but, it's really about looking forward and, what can be done to kind of reduce the impacts of these events.
And that comes down to a political situation, doesn't it, at the end of the day?
Sure, it's political. And politics is really driven by, the society, yeah. So, if you have politicians who are, kind of pushed into the corner for re-election, you must do something, and you know this is what the community wants, then that's how things happen. Yeah, so it's not really the politicians telling the community what to do, it's more the community telling the politicians what we need done.
What have you learned about the groundswell of public or social opinion about the alternative solutions?
Yeah, look, I think a lot of people in the community were kind of a bit shocked that, you know, all that was on the table were engineering solutions originally. You know, so nature-based solutions weren't even on the table in terms of looking at scenarios where we could implement them, you know, as part of a broader range that of solutions that might include some engineering solutions. So I think that's probably what sparked a lot of the community interest there. It's like, well, what's going on here? What are the motivations to only be looking at, you know, these engineering solutions?
So you advocate for a cross-pollination of both engineered solutions and nature-based solutions.
100%, yeah. So we need a combination of both. But, yeah, we need to ensure that they're, you know, rolled out in a way that has, you know, maximum benefit for minimum cost. Yeah. So it all comes down to dollars in the end. And we want to ensure that, you know, we don't impede upon, you know, the productivity of agricultural, primary agricultural lands. You know, we don't want to be flooding people's homes with new dams. We don't want to be telling people you must plant, you know, 100 acres of forest on your, you know, river flats. So it needs to be done, you know, in a consultative way, but, you know, obviously in a fiscally responsible way as well.
Are you confident about the future of flood mitigation, to sum it up?
Look, we're coming from a very low base, you know, in terms of where we currently are. So, you know, anything that gets done in that space will improve the situation for the community. I mean, the problem is that we're, you know, quite likely to go into, you know, an extended El Nino, and, you know, all of this discussion will kind of fade into the background, as it always does. So I think, you know, having community drive the discussion and ensuring that, you know, this topic doesn't get dropped off the radar, so to speak, is going to be critical to implement any change.
Thanks a lot, Professor Damien Maher.
No worries. Thank you, Charles.